Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stanis. I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom in Seattle, Washington. And I'm so pleased today to have Jean Shinoda Boland on our show. She is going to be our keynote speaker at our conference this February. The conference is February 14th through the 16th. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Jean. Jean Shinoda Boland, she is a psychiatrist, a Jungian analyst, an internationally known speaker and author of 13 influential books in over 100 foreign editions. She has The Goddesses in Every Woman, which she is famous for, is 30th anniversary edition, Gods in Every Man, which is in its 25th anniversary edition, Ring of Power, Crossing to Avalon, Close to the Bone, Goddesses in Older Women, Crones Don't Whine, The Million Circle, the list goes on. Her most recent book, I believe, unless she's got a new one out, I think she's working on a memoir, is Artemis, the Indomitable Spirit in Every Woman, which is going to be her topic that she's going to be speaking at Women of Wisdom. So Jean is a past board member of the Ms. Foundation for Women, the International Transpersonal Association, and the C.G. Jung Institute of San Francisco. She is an NGO permanent representative to the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women from the Women's World Summit Foundation. Also, she represents Pathways to Peace, the Million Circle, Earth Child Institute, Woman's Perspective, and the International Public Policy Institute. She is in three acclaimed documentaries, and she has been the advocate for a Fifth World Conference on Women since 2002, and she has an inner certainty that there will be a conference for women in 2022, which she hopes to be organized in India. So welcome, Jean. So I'm going to get it up. There we go. Are you there, Jean?
Yes, I am.
Great. Okay. So glad to have you on the show today. So I first want to talk about the fact that you have been a presenter at the Women of Wisdom Conference more than any other national presenter. What keeps you coming back to Women of Wisdom?
Well, Women of Wisdom has such a wonderful energy. The Northwest women are part of a kind of active sisterhood. It's sort of an outdoors at times, feminist, but not all that vigorous usually, but very deep. I feel that there's a certain connection with nature, and that's Mother Earth. And women who come to the Women of Wisdom Conference tend to have the archetype of Artemis as part of them, which means that there's a sense of sisterhood that is quite natural to come support each other, learn from each other, and be inspired to be whoever you are as a woman who has a certain amount of passion for change, or a passion for creativity, or a passion for nature, and to feel a kinship with each other, and to listen to speakers, and to have an opportunity to speak up yourself is a wonderful opportunity. And I remember attending, I think it was the first one. You had just come back from being abroad and doing some activism, and the conferences began.
Yeah, that was 1995. It was our third conference, but it was our first one of being, in a sense, really big. We had you and Mary Widman. It was an amazing year. And, I remember that. We had a full house, like 700 people at your talk at Seattle Unity Church. It was really quite wonderful. So you have presented at many conferences around the world. You did speak a little bit of how what WOW is like, but how do you see Women of Wisdom different from other conferences?
Well, every single conference depends on who comes as well as who speaks. And it also often involves whatever moves the sense of it coming together. I think that things that work often have an invisible hand, the synchronistic kinds of being moved to say yes to something and certainly I know that that's true. When women are invited to something, one or two will start to feel like, I want to go to that. And they'll speak to others. And then what you have is a conference that the women arrive not exactly knowing why they're there, but having a feeling that it's time for them to get reconnected perhaps, or be open to what it is to spend an actual weekend with other women who also have a sense of inquiry and curiosity and some underlying spirituality. You call it Women of Wisdom, which I think the name of the conference in itself reverberates with something, you know, that essence of something that says, maybe you could explain it.
Well, yeah, I remember the first year, the first committee coming up with that name. It was someone's idea, and there is a resonance. It's just like, yeah, that was it, Woman of Wisdom. And acknowledging that we do have this innate wisdom in ourselves that, you know, has been, I guess, maybe people feel it's been denied for so many centuries. We've been held back, and we're kind of in a state of now of no more, no longer. And you're one of these amazing women who are in the forefront of that, of of what you bring to the world in women's spirituality and the divine feminine in feminism. And just empowering women, you embody that in the same way that I think Woman of Wisdom does too. So we have that commonality probably.
Well, you know, the other thing about this, the particular timing, this is February. It's also Valentine's weekend, as I recall. And so what is heart? I mean, Valentine's for me brings up the idea of a heart-connected activism, for example. Or a heart wisdom. It has to do with a sense of connectedness to each other, to the planet, to family, to a certain quality of energy that reverberates in people. And 2020, in February, before March elections, with all of the turmoil and difficulty of this period of politics, with impeachment in the air and the potential to continue as we have been or to really change. And, you know, that's the whole emphasis on feminism and patriarchy, is that feminism recognizes that there's a missing something in patriarchy that has to do with women, women's wisdom, women's innate sense of connection and nurturing of each other and of children. There is something about the qualities of women that the planet and humanity absolutely needs now, that we are, as everybody who gets into an awareness of climate change has beginning to get, that we don't have all the time in the world, or this world doesn't have that much time left for humanity unless women work together on what we know to help change the trajectory of hierarchy and power over and separateness. I mean, the archetype, what the goddess Artemis really does represent, an interesting combination, because she's the ancient Greek goddess of the hunt and of the moon, and her terrain is not the city, but nature, but the wilderness, and she looked after the young of all living things. She's connected to nature. She roamed her world with her band of nymphs, meaning that she started out with the equivalent of a women's circle. and she is the archetype who has the bow and arrow, which means that you can aim at a target of your own choosing. But it also takes a lot of perseverance and intention to develop the ability to use an instrument like a bow and arrow and aim for a target of your own choosing and hit it. So every single woman who has decided that she's going to do something in this world, she's going to get an education for a certain thing, or she's going to start her own business, or she's going to create a work of art. Every single woman who has a target of her own choosing and the discipline to master what it takes to do that, she is archetypally an Artemis. And then there's the moon. When you see things by moonlight, it looks different than when you see it by sunlight. Sunlight, there's dark and there's light and there's shadow, and there's things you don't see because it's in the dark, and you just highlight and look at what is in the bright light. And that's sort of what patriarchy's vision is. It's an either-or. It's not inclusive of everything. It is hierarchical. And when a woman with an Artemis vision is able to get how we are all connected, I mean, I think that's one of the earliest things that moved me, was being a Girl Scout, which is very Artemis-like, and being up in the mountains under the stars and seeing the Milky Way. And, you know, if you come from a big city, which I did, you don't see stars very much. And then when you actually see not only stars, but the awesome and wonder of the Milky Way, it is beautiful. And it does touch and awe. And if you have an Artemis archetype that resonates with it, it's also a sense of reverence of being part of this beautiful, amazing universe. And we have our little part of it on this planet Earth, which is a beautiful planet, too. You know, I remember when we first, as human beings, got the pictures of Earth from outer space. And you could see the beautiful blue, mostly blue and white planet against a total black void of space. And it actually was moving. And interesting, from a Jungian standpoint, the image of a circle in a photographic field, a square or a rectangle, is you're seeing a mandala. And a mandala is a symbol, a circle within a square. It's like all the Tibetan icons are mandalas, usually. And when you have a sense of a mandala representing something, in Jungian psychology, it tends to represent the whole idea of the self with a large S. And that's humanity's ability to connect with something larger than themselves, the sense that there is divinity, the sense that there is meaning, a sense that, like Alcoholics Anonymous calls it, higher power. Every religion assumes that there is something greater than each individual ego. And if we're part of something and have that something as an innate part of ourselves, then what we do here matters. And that's really what matters a great deal. And I hope that it's an innate sense of wisdom, too. You know, the sense of wisdom that each of us has something to do here. We got born into a particular family, and through it we both have learned difficulties, and we've learned love, and we've learned often the more difficult the life, sometimes the more choice a person consciously makes to side with the parts of themselves that truly are of value, even when the world that you grew up in didn't value it. So women of wisdom are women who get it, that there's a wisdom to tap into. Like the mandala, you could also say that the center that it represents is this wisdom that goes beyond intellect. It's deeper.
Yes. It is, and you've given us so many pieces of information. I haven't even asked the question, share with us who Artemis is, and you have done that. And I love the images of, you know, the hunter, the moonlight, thinking in terms of, yeah, how does moonlight shine in us versus the sun and mandalas. You know, I think I can resonate with mandalas of there's something very deep within them that's kind of, even that circular motion, like, because it is, a mandala is a circle and many aspects part of it, but there's also the spiral in our very ancient civilizations have this spiral, which is also kind of that journey of going inward. And the mandala that you mentioned representing wisdom, well, that's that wisdom going inward. It's not an outward looking outside of yourself for wisdom and, you know, who has wisdom and where am I going to go get wisdom? No, it's innate in us. And that's what you were saying. I love it. And I just remember now we have this commonality that I grew up as a Girl Scout too. And I think we talked about that before, but that was probably my first experience with girls at that time at my age of sitting in a circle, because we sat in circles around the campfire, or we had circle meetings, we sat in a circle, and it was just part of Girl Scouts, and it's to me, feels very much innate in women to do that.
Oh,
so I love all the,
I totally agree.
Yeah.
It is innate.
So given all this, and you're bringing Artemis, so this whole topic of Artemis is going to be your keynote talk about Artemis. And how do you, why is this so important now in our particular time in women's history, and what can we learn from her? So I'm wondering, because you said each person has something to do here. We have that, you know, what we do matters, but it's finding that something. I love it you say that the bow and arrow, the target of your own choosing. And some people, well, I don't know what my choosing is. How am I going to choose? There's so many things to choose. So how do you address that with people? What do you recommend that people find that that target?
Well, one of the things is that you do to take your theme inward. It's an inward knowledge of what it is that matters to each person. It isn't, there's the outer world that is, and the family world and the ambitious world that says that you're supposed to do certain things in this world. And some of it is true, that there's a certain level of learning how to be in this world that requires a certain amount of education and adjustment and things like that. But to find what it is that you have passion for, what it is that for example, that whatever it is that you are doing, when you do it, that you totally lose track of time, for example. The sense of no longer watching clock time, which is something we have to pay attention to be in this world, but that's very left brain. The right brain or the heart has to do with how it is to feel totally absorbed in whatever it is. And usually whatever it is what you have a gift for, that you have a sense that it can totally absorb you, and you lose track of time. Often you have to kind of learn how to adapt to being in time and also drop out of time, which is part of what we do. And if we are leading a life that is both aware and in the world, but is deeply connected inside of ourselves to who it is we are, what it is we came into this world with as a talent or as a natural part of ourselves, will we develop that? And sometimes it's developed very early, and sometimes it's not until often the last third of life, when you're finally through the period of which you've done what you were supposed to do, and you've raised your family. If you're a woman, that you've both gotten educated, perhaps had children, you know, an empty nest, and maybe empty nest rather than, or postmenopausal. It's supposed to be not so good to be a woman to get to postmenopausal empty nest. But what if this is actually the opportunity to become who you naturally are? This is a time when you can actually develop those talents that maybe way back when you didn't go to college and major in that because, you know, how were you going to make a living or how were you going to get through life if you majored in that? But it's something that you've loved all your life, and now in the third phase of your life, I've been playing with the word octogenarian and translating it into octogeranium, because it is a time when women can, with the support of other women, especially bloom. It's a blooming time it's a time when you've lived long enough to conform long enough that now when it's time to speak truth to power, for example, it's often that patriarchy has learned you got to watch out for these older women. They actually speak up and say what is.
Yeah, they're not so worried about what other people think anymore. You know, it's kind of like, okay, this is the last shot I've got. I'm 80 years old. I've got to give it all.
You know, getting back to the Girl Scout image and the circle image, it is that the women don't really have as a model that you're going to go out as a Lone Ranger hero all by yourself. But even Lone Ranger had Tonto. But the hero mythology of patriarchy is that you don't need anybody else. You go out by yourself, and you et cetera. And a lot of early feminists who broke through barriers did not have that much of identification with sisterhood as they did have an identification with the heroic, and they were in that way much more Athena, armored intellectually, able to be with one of the guys and be competitive at that one-to-one level. And they helped us a lot, womenhood in general, to see that women could get ahead in this world, but they were not naturally sisterhood with that archetype. And now when we are where we are post, most everybody still remembers a time at some level that feminism just sort of arose in its last major political incarnation in the 70s, when equality and open doors to certain fields and certain education and all of that, and the birth of Ms. Magazine and all of the sort of sense of there really being an issue of how women are not treated as if they are equal in lots of ways, and so they haven't been given a chance to show what they can do. Well, between 1970, when doors began to open, and now, a lot of women have entered a lot of fields that women had not entered before. And we also are getting to see a time when women's values are coming up against a political reality that wants to push us back. The issues of patriarchy in this current administration are really highlighted. And now what? Okay, this is when, how do we bring about change? And this is where the circle really is a natural form for women to form a circle. And interestingly, recalling that as Girl Scouts, there was a fire in the center of the circle that provided warmth and light. And so a circle with a sacred center is like a Girl Scout circle, only now we are grown women, and it's a metaphor. although we do sit often in circles. But the idea is that there's something that warms us, nourishes us, lights us in the center. And that is an image also of the archetype of the larger self, whether you call it Hestia, the goddess of the hearth, or higher power, or god-goddess. The idea that when you're with each other in circle, you can speak the truth about yourself, and it will be held in confidence, that you can put out your dream and feel support. I mean, when the women's movement began with groups that were circles that had a lot of energy. They were called consciousness raising groups. And now, beginning with my writing, The Million Circle, and then moving towards The Million Circle, and also Urgent Message from Mother, Gather the Women, Save the World. They're all about women being together in a circle that supports each individual woman's own sense of what she is supposed to do or wants to do or needs help with. And the circle of sisters supports her, but also calls upon that invisible energy that is spirit or God or goddess or whatever it is. I mean, human beings have a natural sense of ritual and worship. It goes way back, for as long as it's been human history, with paintings on walls going back thousands of years, I mean, really thousands, like 25,000 years ago or something. The images, before there was written word, there was ritual, or images. There was something about us as humans that have a natural sense of there being an invisible world, a spiritual world, that can help us. And I think Artemis is one of the major ways in which women have felt a sense of spirit, and especially for women for whom the archetype is really a major one, has felt it out in nature and been moved by the beauty of nature and the connections to all the living things that are out in nature.
Yes, brings to mind, you know, it's so important to be out in nature, nature is so threatened now, and we're hearing it all the time of, you know, the problems we're having with the whales are having problems, the elephants are having problems, we're losing species, you know, each day, and so that, you know, nature and the earth is calling to us, crying out to us, and so just to be out in nature, to honor nature, and, you know, I think it's a way also to tap into that calling or that your target for your own choosing, because being in nature can speak to you. You know, you get quiet in nature, or sitting in a grove of trees or by a river or wherever, that's where you can tap into that innate wisdom within you and get away from the busyness of our lives that are, you know, usually in the cities, with families and our homes, everywhere. We're so bombarded with so much energy and so much going on that to go sit by nature is a place where we can go to tap into the feminine, tap into that target of our own choosing, our innate wisdom, what it is we're to do here. I remember I went up to Whistler to had a personal retreat, and it probably was around 2002, somewhere around there, looking to take meditation time to look for a new model. And that's where I came up with it actually was in our logo, of a circle model to run the organization, where we have a council and every, you know, we sit in circle, and the whole circle principles of bringing that within the organization came to me while sitting by a creek. You know, so it quiets us down, and we, you know, we get that information, we get those inspirations. And so that's something, you know, I think you speak to that when you talk about the importance of the reverence and the of nature.
And, you know, one of the reasons why I would think that not just women who live in Seattle, but women from out of the area might be drawn to coming to the Women of Wisdom Conference has to do with Seattle is closer to nature than most big cities. And, you know, the ocean, the river, the mountains, the trees seem closer than certainly the ones, the cities in the east or Los Angeles, although, you know, I've chosen to live in Northern California with San Francisco, the biggest near city. But because it is built and limited, it can't sprawl much because the ocean and the bay, and then across the Golden Gate over to Marin County, where I live and where there are really a lot more trees than there are people here, that it's a more natural kind of environment to feel what you describe. To be able to well, the other thing is that a conference which is encourages the women who come to remember what it was like when they took time out and took walks and could have a kind of what I call blessed solitude. It to have time by yourself in which, as you said, when you were by yourself out in nature, the model for the governance of the Women of Wisdom came up. And the circle is actually a model that is what was existing in the Northwest a long time ago when indigenous people lived there. The council, the model for the American Constitution came from the Iroquois Confederacy, and it had checks and balances. But the interesting thing that was left out when our Constitution was written, they adopted almost everything in the model of the Iroquois Confederacy, except that there had been a council of wise women that set the tone that spoke for what the values and the overall goals of the Iroquois Confederacy would have, and then to implement it, it went to the Council of the Men's Council, who carried out and worked out implementation of the values that essentially the grandmothers. The Council of Wise Women was essentially older women who had been voted onto the council. And there's nothing quite so helpful to get a bigger range of, really, is to see the connection between the generations. And the Native Americans made decisions based on seven generations in the past and seven generations to come, and how a decision made in the present drew upon the past and saw the effect into the future. And if only we could start to do more of that right now as humanity, it would make a huge difference. And it is a way that women have a much more natural tendency to think about the children and the grandchildren and to not think about solving things with power over and stuff like that. And I emphasize Artemis mainly because it's the natural archetype of not only sisterhood with women, but sister and brotherhood with men. I mean, patriarchy is different. Patriarchy is hierarchy over, in which everybody who is not a patriarch is inferior and has to obey the patriarchs at the top. While the model of for women in circle and of this generation, and one of the things I see about Artemis is that Artemis was the sister to Apollo. She was a twin sister she was born first, and then she observed her mother going into a terrible labor and delivery, terrible labor. And since god goddesses are not in mythology, are not like ordinary people, she observed her mother in horrible pain and not being able to deliver until she stepped forth to midwife her mother and help her brother to be born into the world. So one of her interests, which coincides with feminist issues, are things like birthing, about midwifery, about and she was the goddess who looked after the young of all living things. So whether it's little girls or children or animals and all, that seemed to be a natural part of this particular archetype. But given since the women's movement, there have been generations of men and women who grew up with a sense of egalitarian connection with one another. So that as we enter, as we are now in the 21st century, sometimes in this 21st century we are supposed to enter the age of Aquarius, with the age of the Piscean age being over, and we're still wondering whether this particular age will ever come. But it is an age that we do see at the beginning of, and I kind of am amused by thinking of it as being a kind of age of Artemis, Apollo, the age of the sister, in which just in time, if we can stop patriarchy from continuing the damage it has been doing and start to be sister-brother and connection to planet and animals and everything, we can make a rather large difference that has to be made, or we will do ourselves in. It seems simple, but at some level it really is simple. That it's up to us, this generation is still alive and the ones that are coming up, to make it possible for humanity to go on, or we will have done this beautiful planet, the beautiful blue and white planet that the Apollo astronauts saw from outer space. And you know, the next moon shot, the next effort that we are going to make to get to the moon and then go on from the moon is called the Artemis Project. So again, it's a sister, brother.
That's interesting. I like that. Well, you've given us so much information, and I know you're going to be talking more about this at the conference and weaving that into, and like how you, all this connects too with your workshop, which is going to be about circles and about stages of women's lives, and circles with a sacred center is your focus on the workshop. So it's going to be an opportunity for women to be in circle as they sit in circle with you. And so I know that many people are going to be very looking forward to having you here at the conference. And we just want to thank you for your support, for saying yes to come to Woman of Wisdom, for that call you gave me back last spring, which was just, you know, lifted us up. And so I want to remind people that Jean is going to be at the conference speaking Saturday night at our banquet, February 15th, and a workshop on February 16th. You can go to womenofwisdom.org, look for the 2020 conference. You'll find the schedule. And you can register for Saturday or you can register for Sunday. So you don't have to come all weekend if you can't make that. Or you can buy a two-day pass and just really dive into an experience. One of the things that is unique about Woman of Wisdom is that we do intimate three-hour-long workshops. And so you are able to dive in deep into a variety of topics. There's going to be many presenters over the weekend, so there's other choices. And we also have a fabulous concert with Wendy Rule on Friday night. So I invite everybody to check out all the events and to check out Jean's at the banquet and her workshop Sunday morning. And thank you so much, Jean, for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. And I'm looking forward to being up in Seattle and returning to the Women of Wisdom Conference. And If anybody wants to know more about me, I do have a website, jeanbolin.com.
Oh, great. Yes. Yeah. Be sure to go to jeanbolin.com and womanofwisdom.org. And I thought I wanted to mention, you mentioned about Seattle being near nature, and, you know, we have waters on both sides of the city and views of the mountains. There's a hotel right next to our new venue is UW Tower, and right across the street is our hotel. So if you're coming from other places, there's this beautiful hotel called Graduate Seattle Hotel, and their top floor is voted the best rooftop lounge in Seattle, which has views of all the mountains. But you can also, for the same price, come early, stay late, so that you can go see the nature in Seattle. So I invite you to check that out. So I'm going to say goodbye to Jean now, and thank you so much for being on the call.
It's a pleasure, and I'll see you all in February, which is just around the corner.
I know, it is. It's coming soon. Okay, and I'll be back for more interviews with our presenters on other days in the next 2 months. So
great.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jean.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.